Europe's economic powerhouse is facing an increasing skilled labour shortage. Germany's vocational training program, which involves several years of on-the-job learning alongside theory lessons, is credited with giving it the European Union's lowest youth jobless rate. But its popularity now appears to be waning. More than a third of Germany's companies couldn't fill all of their training places last year, leaving 49,000 training positions vacant.
We saw a surprise rise in gold this week, led by a weaker dollar. But we've also been seeing another gold trend from Russia. The Russian Central Bank has been dumping U.S. debt in favor of gold, with total gold reserves at about 1,900 tons in June. That's their highest level in almost two decades. The central bank chief said the team is taking into account risks, including geopolitical and financial ones, and seeking to diversify the bank's assets.
Toyota is doubling down on its so-called future, literally. The Mirai, which translates to future in English, is a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle, also known as an FCV. And the company's cranking up improvements for the next generation of models. At the moment, Toyota sells one Mirai model. It's a sedan that costs a hefty $60,000. That's because demand is limited and each vehicle is made by hand. The Japanese automaker hopes to boost up its popularity by making it cheaper.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's July 30th, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day and another business week getting underway. And we're going to try to start it off on the right foot with you this morning. Thank you for listening. We've got a lot in the program, including our CEO Spotlight returning this morning. It is an app that helps people control and perhaps even prevent diabetes. And a Chicago company is the host of this app called Habit New, and its founder and CEO, Sindhu Rajan, will be with us first in our slot this morning in a few seconds. And then later in the program, Andrew Challenger will be here, the vice president at Challenger Gray and Christmas in Chicago. We'll be talking about jobs and also a new report on how companies might have to consider succession planning for all positions. We'll tell you why they've discovered that and why it's important. That's in our second segment this morning at 5:40. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Asian markets fell today after a steep decline in the U.S. technology sector weighed on Wall Street at the end of last week, despite data showing the economy growing. Technology stocks led the slide in U.S. stocks on Friday, adding to the market's losses from another tech-driven sell-off the day earlier this morning. The Nikkei is going to end the day down 167 points, almost three-quarters of a percent. The Hang Seng is lower by about 71 points. That's about a quarter. The Shanghai is lower by just a fraction. In Europe this morning, markets are all lower. The FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC all off by about a quarter to a third. And in the United States, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street, flat to negative open on Wall Street later this morning. S&P futures are lower. NASDAQ futures are lower by about a quarter. And Dow futures are up just 6 points. Crude oil is trading at $69.41 a barrel, which is up about 73 cents. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. U.S. companies seeking to be exempted from President Trump's tariff on imported steel are accusing American steel manufacturers of spreading inaccurate and misleading information, and they fear it may torpedo their request. Robert Miller is the president and CEO of NLMK USA. He says objections raised by U.S. Steel to his bid for a waiver are literal untruths, in his words. He said the company, which imports huge slabs of steel from Russia, has already paid $80 million in duties and will be forced out of business if it isn't excused from the 25% tariff. U.S. Steel and Nucor, two of the country's largest steel producers, making the same accusations. Miller employs about 1,100 people at plants in Indiana and in Pennsylvania. His resentment, echoed by several other executives, is evidence of the backlash over how the Commerce Department is evaluating the request to avoid duties and to apply for these exemptions. Senator Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan would increase government health care spending by $32.6 trillion over 10 years. That's according to a new study by a university-based Libertarian Policy Center. That's a trillion with a T, by the way. The latest plan from the Vermont Independent would require historic tax increases as government replaces what employers and consumers now pay for health care, according to an analysis by the Mercatus Center at George Mason University in Virginia. It would deliver significant savings on administration and drug costs, but increase demand for a care that would drive up spending, according to this analysis. Diabetes costs the U.S. economy hundreds of billions of dollars every year, not to mention the health toll. But a Chicago company is trying to lessen the impact. We're going to learn about Habit News diabetes prevention app this morning. That's Habit NU, Habit New. And the founder and CEO is with us today, Sindhu Rajan, the founder and CEO of Habit New. Good morning and welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We'll get into the app momentarily and what it's all about. But I want to first talk about just generally the diabetes and why you've decided to get into this space and why it's so important.
Well, as my name suggests, I come from India. South Asians have a high genetic propensity to develop type 2 diabetes. So it runs in my family. I know the disease very intimately. So I spent 12 years of my career in researching type 2 diabetes at Yale and the University of Chicago. I have seen firsthand how little help people who are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes gets, because it's a huge burden for people as well as the economy. But they get very little help when they are diagnosed from their physicians or the hospital. The volume is so high, let alone be preventing type 2 diabetes. The fact is, type 2 diabetes is a preventable condition, and there are evidence-based programs that will help you prevent it even from happening. These are all academic exercises, and I happened to meet a very brilliant software developer 4 years ago. So it was a no-brainer that we want to bring this evidence-based research and take it to the public. So that's what I do.
And in terms of the numbers, you mentioned India. Uh-huh. It's very populous anyway, but give us a sense of the numbers, how many people have type 2 diabetes.
60 million people in India have type 2 diabetes today.
In India alone.
India alone. India is the diabetes capital of the world, if you put it that way.
Yeah. And so can you extrapolate that out to, let's say, in the United States and Canada and North America?
Not behind.
Yeah.
United States, one out of nine individuals have type 2 diabetes, and every one out of three adults are at risk for developing type 2 diabetes. That's scary.
Right. And that's what your doctor, if your doctor has had this conversation with you, perhaps is called pre-diabetes, right?
Yes.
Okay. So along comes the software developer, and you kind of compare notes and get ready, and so born is Habit New.
It is called Habit New.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
So CDC in 2002 has developed a lifestyle modification program that will help you prevent type 2 diabetes. It was a landmark study done in 26 centers throughout the United States. The result was lifestyle modification developed by CDC as a year-long program was 58% more effective than the anti-diabetic drug metformin.
Wow.
So this is a classroom-based program. Every participant in the program got a case manager, very expensive to implement on a large scale. What we do is we took that whole structure developed by CDC, put it into an app, easy-to-use online app, with the power of technology, and we wanted to bring that evidence-based program to the public. That's Habit New.
And so give us a sense of how it works. You download the app, put it on your iPhone or your iPad or whatever, your Android, and it comes up, and it's basically a classroom online. Is that a good way to
describe it? It's a classroom online. You got it.
Yeah.
So what we do is once you have to take CDC's risk test. If you qualify as a pre-diabetic individual, then you can apply to join the program. It's a little more structured than just downloading an app. then we give you access to our program. It's app is just a channel to deliver the program. So it's you're not doing anything on your own. Mm-hmm. You join the program. You can access the program through an app or online through from your computer. And then every week you have a lifestyle coach who is monitoring you, and we will go through every component of diabetes prevention, from diet to exercise to stress management to sleep. So the program has two phases. The first 6 months, it's a core phase of the program, and the last 6 months, you do it on your own, where your lifestyle coach is watching you from a distance. It's a year-long program. We assess your progress, and by the end of a year, you are all equipped to prevent diabetes.
And so I'm guessing it tells you what to eat, how to exercise, concrete things to change your behavior.
Exactly. It's not a diet program. It's not a weight loss program either, but it's a behavioral change program.
Credit for its success? Is it that it's easy to use? Is it that people don't have to go away to go to a class? There have this person is watching them in a virtual sense. Do all of those things help make it successful?
Part of it.
Yeah.
It's never easy. I would never say behavioral modification is easy. It's hard. But when you have a support from a coach and your peers, you can do it. So using technology helps a convenience. In Chicago, for example, the diabetes prevention program exists, but it was a failure, and finally YMCA has to fold it because in the cold weather, nobody comes to the class. Nobody come for face-to-face meetings. So what we are trying to do is make it more accessible and convenient so that everybody who is at risk can participate in the program.
Is it done on my own time? As let's say I'm part of the class, as you called it. Do I get to do this when I have a free moment, or is it a set time?
It's both.
Okay.
There is a weekly check-in calls with your lifestyle coach, but if you can't attend the call, you can watch the video of the call. Some people will be participating. Everything is recorded, so you can watch. Yes, you can do everything on your own time, at your own convenience. We are all busy.
How does the interaction with the coach work? Is it is the coach interacting with a group of people via the apps? As you mentioned, it's sort of in a live forum, or is it one-on-one?
It's both. So we have a forum where you can communicate with your coach and your small group at any time. But also there are live webinars. If you want to see and talk to your coach face-to-face, you can talk to your coach. It's all building accountability. The coach is not a magician.
Mm-hmm.
So when you know that somebody is there to support you, you are more likely to succeed.
I'm really surprised that more doctors don't... you mentioned earlier that doctors don't really have this discussion, a full discussion with patients. Why is that?
It's all about time. You know, one thing about type 2 diabetes is it doesn't hurt.
Mm.
Type 2 diabetes is always referred as a slow-moving hurricane. When it hits you bad. But it's very slow. It takes years for you to develop the complications. So there is not that emergency. When you break your leg, doctors have to take care of you because you are in pain. In type 2 diabetes, that's not the case. It takes a long time to get there. And when you get there, there's no turning back. It's all about the emergency of the condition. And also, doctors are very, very busy. They are overbooked. And you, as an individual, is not in any danger. So you know, there's not enough time. And we have to take a consumer approach to this problem.
Right. And that's the other part of this. People will ask, okay, what's the cost of this? How much does it cost to take part in this program? Do you need a doctor's referral or a doctor's prescription even? What are those aspects of this?
That's actually great. When we started building this program, we didn't know who's going to pay for it. But it was my passion that we should build something like this. And 2016, we got really lucky. As I told you, that this is an evidence-based program. NIH and CDC together spent a lot of money in proving that this program works. And under Affordable Care Act 2016, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid decided that they are going to start reimbursing for the National Diabetes Prevention Program. The good news is once Medicare decides to reimburse, commercial insurance health plans also decide. So there is a CPT code for it. And as of today, anybody who qualifies for Medicare is eligible to participate in the program. It's paid for. And Blue Cross Blue Shield and some commercial insurance plans in 8 states are already reimbursing for this program.
That's important because people have, I mean, I'm sure you know, evidence shows if it's not covered by insurance, people won't do it at all.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what are people saying about it? You've obviously had some one-on-ones with folks who've gone through this. What are the reactions of people?
Well, people, we have 1,000 people, up to 1,000 people every month joining our program right now. It's mixed. Initially, there is resistance, but it's voluntary. Nobody is forcing you to join the program. When people join, they realize that it's hard. Changing the way you eat, changing the way you function, it's hard. So we have around 20% drop out right away. But those who complete 3 to 4 weeks of the program never want to leave. Mm-hmm. They are like sad that you're not going to talk to me after 6 months anymore. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have seen fantastic outcomes for people who stick with it.
There's also a component of this that you've touched on, but let's go into it a little bit further, and that's the general support. It's almost like a support group. How important is it for a person who's in this program to know that they have other people around them that are going through the same thing and to be able to interact with them?
That is very, very important for people. First of all, these are all the people with a common goal. You have your family, but they don't have the same goals as you. Mm-hmm. So there is a common goal and people support each other. It's like a buddy system. When you say, oh, I'm very tired today, somebody will get on our social discussion forum, which is very private. But they will just go and say, no, get up, take 10,000 steps today. Mm-hmm. So what it is it gives everybody a safe space. You don't have to be out there declaring in the public, but it's a safe space for you to get support and be very, very private.
You talked about, mentioned earlier, the economic impact of type 2 diabetes. Let's talk about that a little bit more. What is the impact? What are we talking about? How is it impacting the economy of the country, a person's livelihood, the ability to have a livelihood?
Yeah, there are two. Economic impact is huge from a personal level as well as from a national level. So type 2 diabetes and its complications cost the annual our economy annually $250 billion. That's a lot. And this is a 2014 estimate. So you can imagine how it is in 2018. It is a totally preventable condition. Why don't we put a roadblock before even it happens?
Right, right.
That's where we are.
Right. And two, that when you say numbers that big, why is this not more of a priority?
Well, it is a lifestyle condition, or I may call it a lifestyle disease. It is a priority. If you talk to American Diabetes Association, it's number one priority. But for people, it's the same reason I told you. It doesn't hurt. Once you're diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and it will be 10 or 15 years when you get hit with the first complication.
Let's talk about becoming an entrepreneur after being a scientist. What was that process like for you?
Well, it's very interesting. First 1 year, I had terrible identity crisis. I thought, what am I doing? Business? Mm. But end of the day, now I don't feel any difference. I am helping people as a scientist in a micro level. And here at a macro level, I'm directly helping people. Both provide immense gratification.
Aside from the identity crisis, what were the other challenges of getting this off the ground?
Obviously, funding.
Mm-hmm.
Getting it off the ground requires a lot of capital, and there is a lot of reluctance from investors to invest in lifestyle modification programs because they believe that it's never going to work. and we are proving it wrong.
Yeah. Was there anything about starting this in Chicago that, any reason why that, obviously you have the background here, but was there something about the space, the ecosystem here that made this a good choice for you?
Well, I live here. I have my family here. So, and also all my connections are here. And above all, Chicago is a very close-knit ecosystem. So when we started the program, Greg and I, my co-founder, Greg and I was part of an incubator called Matter, which started 4 years ago at the Merchandise Mart. And it started as to develop an ecosystem specifically for companies that specialize in digital health. We were one of the founding companies at Matter, and the ecosystem is very small and very close, and I find it very, it worked for us very well. We grew with Matter, and Matter has been part of our growth.
Matter is, as you mentioned, it's an incubator of sorts, but it's more than that. It helps sort of solve some of those problems, like you mentioned earlier, the funding part of this, the technical part of this. All those things are sort of brought together under the Matter umbrella, aren't they?
Exactly. Matter is not just an incubator where you get a desk. What they have done is to create an ecosystem, exactly like what you are mentioning, getting the stakeholders together. We did our first pilot at Advocate, and that was facilitated by Matter. That's why I meant we grew, and Matter was part of every aspect of our growth so far. I'm very glad to be part of that ecosystem.
How are you gauging success? Is it the number of people who are signed up, have the app downloaded, or somehow are you going to find out how many people you've maybe prevented from getting type 2 diabetes?
Of course, joining is not just the beginning. The outcomes are very, very important, and we track every outcome. Like, we track outcomes based on two metrics. One is engagement. What percentage of the people engage in our program? And we have touch points for engagement. And we look at your behavioral change. We look at whether you lost any weight, because the study shows that even 5% weight loss results in 50% reduction in risk of developing type 2 diabetes. So we look at all outcomes, and end of the program, we put together a percentage outcome, just like the initial CDC study did.
What, if you look a year or 2 years or three or five down the road, what is the strategic plan for Habit New? Where would you like to see it go?
I would like Habit New to grow and be there everywhere in the country. Mm-hmm. That is exactly what we are doing. So in order to get reimbursed from Medicare and other insurance plans, CDC has to approve your program. So first you have to run the program and show outcomes to CDC, and also prove that you are running the program according to guidelines, so that we are not just a juice diet. You know, it's very different here. So we have done that. Habit New has now full recognition from CDC, and we can get reimbursed for Medicare. What we want to do is not be a provider of the diabetes prevention program. We want to be an enabler. We want to enable every hospitals, every organization that care about community health to run the Habit New program at their location. So that's the direction we are taking. We help you. You can license our recognition from CDC, we train your staff, and you run the program. And this is our vision, that Habit New program runs in every hospital or any organization, a community-based organization in the country.
Do you now consider yourself more a scientist than an entrepreneur, or is it half and half?
Well, it never changes. I am still looking at the numbers and the program and with a very analytical point of view, like a scientist. I guess I'm finding that there is less difference between the two. Mm-hmm. I'm the same individual. I don't see much difference.
When you talked about going through the challenges and seeing those and having some of the doubts about it, what was it that motivated you to keep going? Was there some sort of aha moment or something that pushed you forward?
Well, the determination pushed me forward, and being a scientist, that's where my science helped me, because 90 8% of your experiments fail. Mm-hmm. You live for the 2%. And I'm used to that determination and perseverance. And I think that helped me move forward. Year two and year one were very hard because we had no funding and we were trying to prove, trying to get the CDC's recognition. No one, people had doubts about whether we are ever going to make it. And my experience in research helped me because I knew that I have to strive for that 2% success.
Well, Sindhu, it's wonderful meeting you. All the best to you and everyone at Habit New, and please keep us up to date on the progress.
Definitely. And again, if you are an organization and you care about your community's health, Habit New is ready. You can reach us at habitnew.com. It's HABITNU.com. And drop us a line. We will help you implement your own diabetes prevention program.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sindhu Rajan, CEO and founder of Habit New. Again, the website is habitnew.com. That's habitnu.com. And we will post more of our conversation with Sindhu on the Opening Bell podcast later this morning at WGNradio.com. It's our CEO Spotlight, regular Monday feature here on the Opening Bell.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the Opening Bell, our Monday edition. According to a new survey from the global outplacement and executive coaching firm Challenger Gray and Christmas, 64% of companies say they're hiring right now. There is no doubt it's a tight job market. We'll bring in this morning the Vice President, Challenger Gray and Christmas, Andy Challenger. Andy, welcome back to the Opening Bell. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Always good having you. We know that from everybody saying it that it's a tight job market, but 64% shows just how busy this scene is these days. That's a pretty high number.
It is a high number. It's one of the highest that we've recorded in this survey we do, where we ask HR managers kind of what their stance on hiring is at any point in time. Right now, 64% are saying they're actively hiring, with an additional 25% of companies saying they're really in retention mode, so fighting to kind of retain those employees that they do have right now.
The retention part of this is important because as we keep reporting on this tight job market, we keep waiting to see wages go up significantly in some meaningful way. Any evidence that that is happening as part of that retention effort?
Yeah, we have over the last couple months started to see wages slowly rise. Still not that kind of explosive growth in wages that we've expected to see. You know, part of that is we did see and more people come into the participating in the workforce last month than expected, and that's why we saw the unemployment rate rise slightly despite a large number of new workers coming into the economy.
What are the other efforts in terms of retention that you're finding companies are offering?
Yeah, we did it in this survey, just asked HR managers, so people that are in charge of the hiring process of their companies, kind of the measures they're using to retain talented workers right now. 90% said they're using 401k contributions. That's become a very standard benefit that companies are offering. And right behind that, 88% companies said competitive salary is up there with the top methods they're using to retain and attract the most talented employees out there right now.
A couple of the other ones that rank high on this, and you can tell us whether these are common or if these you've seen these in other of your surveys, 71% offering tuition reimbursement, 83%, of course, health benefits, 76% professional development. Have those numbers been that high, or is this unique?
Yeah, it is unique, particularly professional development and tuition reimbursement. Right? That is companies clearly signaling to the market that they are trying to retain and attract millennials, right? People that are fresh out of school, that are starting their careers, and companies are using these benefits to make their employment propositions and offers something that's unique in the market and attractive to those employees.
One of the other unique things that jumped off of the survey that you guys did was companies, you know, may need to start doing some sort of planning for replacing me or my coworker or somebody, people who are not in that corporate suite. Has that ever been done before? I mean, where you're going down the line saying, hey, if this person leaves, we've got to have a plan of action.
Yeah, this succession planning, it's something that you've always heard about at the very top of organizations in the C-suite, maybe a level down. But this is the first time that I'm hearing and our company's hearing from HR managers out there that the labor market is so tight and they're so worried about losing key employees that they're putting plans together for key managers lower down in the organization as well as highly skilled technical employees. Companies are just saying we have to have a plan. They could get, these key employees could get picked up at any time. They're getting offers from competitors, and we might not be able to refill that role from the outside. So we have to have a plan inside who's going to take those positions.
What would be, Andy, the impact of that, the negative impact of that for a company? I'm thinking, okay, well, if you lose one of your key employees, that might put a project on hold. Are we talking about a potential negative impact for growth for companies?
Yeah, absolutely. We're starting to run into that wall. You're starting to see it in really small businesses. Right now, we've heard reports from around the country in tight labor markets where small businesses aren't able to operate for a couple days or weeks at a time when they lose a key employee and they can't replace them. And now we're starting to see the problems associated with a tight labor market trickling into the really large companies that are saying, we might lose production ability if we don't have somebody in these roles quickly if somebody were to go.
What other trends are you seeing here, Andy? Is it one of the things that kind of jumped off the survey too, the report you guys put out, was there's a ghosting effect happening where job seekers, they have such a pick of the jobs that they're ghosting firms like you and hiring authorities?
Yeah, it's something we've seen a little bit of and are hearing a lot of reports about. Candidates in this market have so many offers, they might be submitting resumes to 20 or 30 different companies at a time, getting multiple offers, and don't even bother responding to some of the companies that end up offering them positions because they've got so many other options and aren't following through with those offers that they do get.
This is another jobs report week. Friday is the big day for that. We'll get some other data on Thursday. How long can we continue down this path where it's so good?
Yeah, there is some just natural limit to it. We're going to run out of employees for companies to hire at some point. Very well could see that in the next couple months where we hit that natural rate of unemployment where there just aren't more people that companies can add into their workforces despite demand for it. All signs point to another positive job report right now, but we could see running into that limit at some point in the near future.
You seeing any of those headwinds at all in any of your research of people cutting jobs or planning to make job cuts?
We've got about 6.7 percent of the companies that we looked at right now that are actively downsizing. So, right, there's always some area of the economy over the last couple of years. It's been retail where they are making layoffs and job cuts. So there are people entering the job search, and there at this point still are enough people for companies to hire.
Any advice this morning from the top, from your management view for workers and for employers in this area today?
Yeah, we think this idea of succession planning, a couple rungs down is a good idea. So if you're an employee and you see a key position maybe above you that is something you think you could grow into, tell HR it's something you're interested in, and maybe they'll put you on a growth plan or start preparing and giving you some skills to potentially take that job.
Andy, we appreciate you being with us as always.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Challenger is the vice president at Challenger, Gray, and Christmas.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a couple of stocks of local interest we're watching this morning ahead of their earnings report. Caterpillar shares are up about a half a percent, 142.56 a share. And the Boeing Company up about a half a percent at 360.65. This is the Opening Bell on 720 WGN. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We're still talking about the aid program for farmers announced by the White House last week. And over the weekend in Buenos Aires, at a meeting of the G20 agricultural ministers, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue said farmers could receive cash payments from the $12 billion aid package as soon as late September. But he warned the program will not make tariff hit farmers whole. Perdue said that the plan would include between $7 and $8 billion in direct cash relief. U.S. growers are expected to take an $11 billion hit due to retaliatory tariffs after Washington placed duties on Chinese goods. Secretary Perdue said, obviously, this is not going to make farmers whole. And a quick review of where we ended the markets on Friday at the close. September wheat at 530 and a half a bushel. September corn at 362. August soybeans at 870 and a half. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, July the 30th. There's only one major economic report due out today. It's the National Association of Realtors Pending Home Sales Index for June. Tomorrow, the Commerce Department issues its report on personal income and spending during June on Tuesday. Also tomorrow, Standard & Poor's releases the S&P Case-Shiller Index of May home prices. The Conference Board releases the Consumer Confidence Index for July. Federal Reserve policymakers also begin a two-day meeting to set interest rates. We do not expect an interest rate hike this time around. Wednesday is the Fed statement. It's also another big week of earnings. Caterpillar earnings today among the big companies. Pfizer tomorrow, Procter & Gamble. Apple comes out Tuesday as well. Humana, Sprint, and Tesla on Wednesday. Also Yum Brands, Aetna, Berkshire Hathaway on Thursday. Kraft Heinz, Toyota coming on Friday. And, of course, Friday is the U.S. Jobs report. So a very busy week of things happening in the markets. Lots of things that could move the markets this week.